C2A. Number 13A.
We started this morning with the sixth main subject, that of truth. And in truth, we always come to the sixth day of creation, to the symbolism of what man is, what constitutes man. Here in the chapter of Atonement and Eucharist, it's naturally the question, how do we atone to the point where we are at one with the idea man, so that we have an at-one-ment with the idea man, so that at that point we just feel that all there is true about ourselves is only the idea of truth as man. Naturally, this is a great aim, and Jesus was showing through his own life history, step by step, how he showed the way to arrive at that point of being just one with the idea man, that idea which is free from all material concomitant. Therefore, that subject depicts more or less also our way, our step-by-step unfoldment, if we have also in view that we begin to realize that actually we do not want to be one with the mortal body, in the world, with the mortal concept of man, but with the idea man. So what do we have to do? And the subtones show us the step-by-step unfoldment of that development. It starts out with truth as mind and says, we only arrive really at the point where we are the Son of God if we start with mind and begin to see that mind is the creator of men, and that we begin to conceive of that so that not mortal parents are the creator of men, but that the divine mind has an idea and creates man as idea. Then we come to the subtone of spirit, spirit which always gives birth, which brings forth. And so we begin to realize that we have to be like the Virgin Mary, very pure within ourselves, and see that only by accepting that idea as spiritual, that really we bring it also forth into existence, so that it shows that we must keep that idea constantly pure and never try to mingle it with the corporeal concept of man. In this way, we really purify our consciousness, so that only that which belongs of the nature of God is attributed to the idea man. At that point, naturally we see that this must be defended against any suggestions, and so is always that rule of soul which rejects all the opposing arguments. So at the point of soul, Mrs. Eddy shows that Jesus rejected error and sin, and through that offering and spiritual offering, he was establishing within himself that infallible, that untouchable concept of man as a true identity of being, so that the idea man became his only identity. And that identity of man cannot be touched by anything else. So it stays in its balance of soul. So when we see that man is identified through God, we naturally then go a step further and say, how are all the ideas called individual men related to each other? So we come to principle, to the relationship, to the intra-relationship within a whole system of principle, and therefore he could see that only ideas can be related. that mortals cannot be related to each other. Therefore he said, Who is my father? His father was God. Who is my mother? His mother was love. Who am I? I am the ideal son. What are my brethren and sisters? Those that do the will of principle. So that he began to see that really only the interrelationship of ideas, men, of individual idea men, is actually constituting the universe of men, which frees us from the people universe. So that the people universe really should be overcome at that point, that we see that what we are engaged in is to establish a universe of relationship of ideas and not a people universe, and therefore should not even be influenced by a people universe. People are trouble. That's all. No people, no trouble. It's as simple as that. Yeah. Where are the biggest trouble in your life, in the family, and in your with your relatives? That's always the biggest trouble. No people, no trouble. One principle, harmony. That's very easy. But that principle, as an interrelationship of ideas, says, and we come to the point of view of life, that this principle must be practiced. That it is not just a theoretical principle, but life demands life practice, life experience. And we have seen that Mrs. Eddy uses two whole pages only to express really the subtone of truth as life, bringing in that it is the life experience that really makes us strong enough and conscious enough in order that we can go out of the human experience into a completely spiritual experience. So what we saw at the end of the last hour was that tone of truth as life, saying that we must have a living truth. Can you see truth as life, a living truth, that it is a healing and resurrecting truth, truth and life, but that that resurrection can only take place by first laying down having the willingness of laying down the mortal concept, and that, she says, brings to us persecution as long only as we believe that we have to lay down the mortal sense of things. And so she tells us that there will be persecution because the world cannot understand that and not value that, that therefore until we have demonstrated to the fullest sense truth as life, we go through bitter experience, through bitter experience whereby we must have the willingness to submit ourselves to the divine decree that we must drink of the cup of sorrow, of bitterness, and that he recommended that to all followers, drink ye all of it. And so we experience that Passover, the Last Supper, as a sacramental symbol, which says, through all my life I must see that I can really withdraw from a mortal concept of life. And at the Last Supper, Mrs. Eddy says, that was the last concession he made to the material. It was a mighty occasion. It was a mournful occasion, close at the close of a day, a sad supper in the twilight of a glorious career, but that it was the last concession, and so Jesus closed forever the ritualism and his concession to matter. That was the end of that sacrifice, and that Mrs. Eddie Scholz brought him into the newness of life, where we have to see that the truth is the bread that feeds us and sustains us. Truth as life is that bread, that truth, which sustains always our life. Where we, in the midst of that mournful occasion, we can always withdraw and say, what is going on? Is actually something inimical going on? Is there something going on that persecutes me? Or is not the very opposite going on, that God loves me? That God pours out the manna, that God pours out the fullness and abundance of being on me, and it's only a question, do I accept it or don't I accept it? So that we know that truth is life, that truth does sustain us under every circumstance. And that frees me from a sense that I'm dependent on enemies, are dependent what the enemy does and what the enemy says. I'm independent then from the people universe, and I have had to close, so to say, that life experience that believes that we are in a people universe, and are then ready, just as Jesus was ready for the crucifixion and ascension, are ready to close that scene and say, now I go forward into a completely different experience, into the experience of truth as truth. So we come to truth as truth, which is a very momentous tone. We read here on line 18, when the human element in him struggled with the divine. Can you see the human and the divine seems always to be in a struggle? Though the divine always embraces the human, but the human cannot embrace the divine completely, though there is always a great struggle going on. Then our teacher said, not my will, but thine be done. It is the final capitulation before truth, where Jesus said, I'm no body anymore, I'm no more mortal, I'm no more an identity, an ego by myself. I give in, not my will now, but thy will be done. Can you see that terrific strength that is in it, the terrific power sense that is in it, which when we can say, I'm nothing. When we really see, I'm nothing, all there is the one truth, all there is the idea, man. That is, let not the flesh, but really the spirit be represented in me, where man, representative of God, is seen to be wholly spiritual, and no more have any vertige of corporeal sense or of a material sense. And this is the new understanding of divine love. Again comes in divine love quite unexpectedly, again in the wonderful sense, which shows there is no bigger love, as Jesus said, than to lay down your life for your friend. There is no bigger love than to lay down our sense of being a mortal, of being a person, of being an independent selfhood, to lay down that and say, not my will, but thy will be done, because that's the new understanding, but it's the understanding of divine love, because divine love wants us to do that. It's not just, say, by accident that this should happen. It is really a great plan of love at work that says, love wants to save you and will therefore give to us all the occasions and experiences that are necessary in order to draw us to the at-one-ment with the idea man, and afterwards to the at-one-ment with God. It gives all for Christ or truth. Isn't this a short sentence? Isn't it a clear-cut sentence? Who can misunderstand that sentence? There is no possibility to misunderstand it. Do we do it? It's so clear, the teaching. Do we do it? Now we really come with truth as truth. We come face to face, really, with our Christ selfhood, which says, not mine will be done, but thine will be done. It gives all for Christ truth. Do we do that? Or are we backing out? Do we do that once in 1,000 years? Are we doing that once in a lifetime? Or are we doing that as a fact that constitutes our being, therefore always? Do we do that? Now we come to questions. We come to that point where we begin to ask ourselves, what are we? What do we do? Now we come to that deep interrogation into our own attitude. Is really within us that expectancy, that willingness to say always, not my will, but thine be done? Do we actually in every situation give to Christ truth all what we have, or only a little bit, just a little bit, so that we feel we have done something? But that's not what the science of being says, not at all. We always have a textbook and we believe that the truth is in the textbook, and we always believe that we don't understand the textbook. We understand the textbook very well, but we don't want to understand it. This sentence is so clear that every beginner can understand it. There is nothing mysterious about that sentence, but we don't want to understand it. We read over it very quickly, because something within us is very uncomfortable and feels, oh no, not that, please not that. Let's see something else, and goes right over the sentence. Whereas it should really stop there and say, do I do it? Is that really what I want for? Or am I just professing to Christian Science and to the textbook? Just professing that really the textbook is the answer, but not willing to accept the answer. Each one must put that question to himself and answer himself. Nobody can answer it for the other. It's there where in the secrecy of our own consciousness we must be honest to ourselves. We don't need to tell the other one if we are not honest. But with ourselves, we have to be honest and really ask, is this really what I want? Is it really that? You know, John Dorley gave the last summer school in 1949 in Oxford. It was a momentous, a unique occasion. That atmosphere still lingers in our consciousness. Those who have been there and have been awake to what he wanted to say there, that atmosphere is still present with us. Couldn't leave us anymore. It was so terrific, so momentous. And in that summer school, he did take the four Gospels, but only as a symbolism for showing us really the great laws of the interdependence between absolute Christian Science and Christian Science. And though he was explaining incidents from the Bible, he would suddenly stop again and often and often and again say, the very first thing is to ask yourself, where art thou? What is your motive? Asking this question, do you really want Christian Science the way Christian Science is? Or do you want Christian Science the way you like Christian Science to be? This is a decisive question. This is also the holy struggle. The side note here is the holy struggle. This is the deep question that we have to be honest from time to time with ourselves and ask, do I really want Christian Science the way it is? And if yes, then you have to accept what it teaches. And that teaching is a mighty more than thinking nicely, and to have nice thoughts, and to talk nicely, and to be friendly with each other, and to be jolly with each other, and to be religiously Christian with each other. This is all sissy, it's all platitudes compared with what really the atonement of Christ demands of us. That's something very, very different. So, it gives all for Christ or truth. It blesses then its enemies. It heals the sick. It casts out error. It raises the dead from trespasses and sins, and preaches the gospel to the poor, the meek in heart. As I said, the side note is the holy struggle, and you can see that it is a holy struggle. The moment we ask these big questions and want to answer them honestly, then it's a struggle. Because inwardly something longs to accept Christian Science as what Christian Science is, but also inwardly there lingers something that wants to keep us back. That says, it comes too early, let us wait a little bit. You can come afterwards, but at the moment I'm not ready. At the moment it's too high. At the moment I want to go around it. I will do it then when I retire. Then I have time. And then I have plenty of time to study. And that is usually too late. It needs a whole life. And it's the whole life experience. And there is no use in pushing it off. We have to start right now and not to try to evade it. Mrs. Eddy knew all that. She has gone through those questions. She knew it. And therefore she takes a whole paragraph now just in asking these questions. See? And we come to the next paragraph, which has a side note, incisive questions. There are six of them, and one is just as hard for the human mind as the other. It says, as a question, Christians, are you drinking the cup? She doesn't say, are you hoping and desiring and willing to drink the cup? She says, are you doing it? So that's the first interrogation into our conscience and says, is that actually what I do? Are you drinking his cup? Another question, have you shared the blood of the new covenant? The persecutions which attend a new and higher understanding of God. Is that so? Have you shared the blood of the new covenant? The blood of the new covenant is really that we put everything into Christian Science, even if it is with bleeding footsteps, even if it is with a bleeding heart, and our heart bleeds very often. Mrs. Eddy's heart did bleed over and over when she had to establish a movement that was ignorant about her discovery and could see that she had to do with a team of workers that did not understand really what she was striving at. Don't you think that her heart was bleeding? It did bleed. And so it bleeds with everyone that tries to fulfill the new covenant. The next question is, if not, can you then say that you have commemorated Jesus in his cup? What's the good of saying Jesus, 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 nothing but Jesus, and Jesus did it, and Jesus is the one and the only, it's the Master and the Savior, and so on, if we don't believe it? If that is only saying things, if it's only admiring him, but not really commemorate him in his cup. The cup was life, the laying down of a mortal sense of things. That was the cup. Another question, are all who eat bread and drink wine in memory of Jesus willing truly to drink his cup, not the cup of wine, and to take his cross and leave all for the Christ principle? Can we, when we ask ourselves honestly, say, yes, I do that? Can we say that? And suddenly we feel that we are naked, that we have nothing really to close with. The truth is that which closes us. And we feel completely naked because we feel, my golly, no, I haven't really done very much. I've really only played with science and played around with science. I wasn't really sincere. Then another question, then why ascribe this inspiration to a dead rite instead of showing by casting out there and making the body wholly acceptable unto God that truth has actually come to our standing? Why don't we do that? Why, instead of showing forth that truth has been understood, why instead of that just make conform to rituals? Another question, the last one. If Christ's truth has come to us in demonstration, no other commemoration is requisite. That's enough commemoration that truth has come in demonstration. For demonstration is Immanuel, which means God with us. That's the Christ, God with us. And if a friend be with us, why need we memorials for that friend? We do not need any rituals. We don't need anything like that anymore. Whew. Six questions. And we know that it is right, in a way, theoretically, to answer that question with yes, because we know that is a right theory. But when we ask ourselves, do I accept it? And somehow we feel that we are very small still, that we have not really put on our Christ manhood, that we really have not the stature of the fullness of Christ, not at all. That we are just little mortals still crawling on our belly and trying to find some truth that nourishes us. We haven't risen really to the true sense of manhood at that point.